Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and I have a very, 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 very special guest. If I can even call you a guest, I mean, come on. For all of you OG listeners, you will recognize Sarah's voice immediately. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Tiggy. Hi, everyone. So excited to be back.
It's so good to have you back. For anyone who is new this year, a new listener, Sarah is one of the amazing three co-founders of this podcast. So she's absolutely the OG, the OGest of OGs as it gets. And we're just excited to have her back because she was with me this weekend at the race.
It was so, so fun. It was my first race of the season and was just so happy to be there. See cars on track. We've gone to Austin, I think now it's every year since 2021, right?
Four or five now? Yeah.
Yeah. It was our first ever race. It's always so special. Sadly, again, as listeners from before this year know, Chessa was doing other sporting activities. She was in Michigan with her sister and some of our other friends at the Michigan football game, which I think had like 100,000 people. So we were all at extremely large
weekend.
Scale sporting events. Yeah.
That's awesome. Sarah, how is life post podcasting? Give the listeners an update.
It is good. What's been happening? I'm still in New York, very anxiously waiting / hoping for Tiggy to get back after business school. Still in New York, still working, still a huge F1 fan. I feel like I say to people sometimes when they ask or are asking about the podcast and everything, I say I'm retired from the day-to-day of podcasting, but that does not mean my F1 obsession has changed. So,
no, we still text each other real time, like every race. So
I know. I was going to say, and again, for original kind of listeners will know this, Chessa, Tiggy, and I were like best friends before starting the podcast and had this kind of shared obsession of F1. So it's been amazing still being able to chat, obviously having Tiggy super plugged into the industry news to let us know what's going on. And then of course, always having Tiggy to live text reactions to, even when she's up at like 6 a.m. California time watching races.
Yeah, all our Pacific Coast time fans and Australian and New Zealand fans, they know the pain.
the most dedicated of everyone. I know it makes like 9 a.m. in New York look so relaxed in comparison.
We used to complain about that. I remember we'd be like, oh, races at 8 a.m.
So early, I know. Yeah. But so excited to be back. And this was the most fun weekend to do it.
I know. We have a lot to discuss. But maybe before we dive into the weekend, let's chat about some news because we have some big announcements that have happened, not least of which I talked about this on the last episode and gave my thoughts a little bit. But Sarah, I want to chat with you about Apple officially getting the U.S. broadcast rights. So what we know about the deal is it's a 5-year deal worth an approximate rumored $140 million per year. So it's upwards of $750 million contract, which is pretty crazy. The biggest question you all had was what's going to happen with F1 TV? Because obviously we have ESPN now and we have F1 TV that sort of lives alongside it. Apple announced that F1 TV is not going away, but you have to have an Apple TV subscription to access it. And so it's still a little bit unclear about how F1 TV will exist or will live alongside it. Is it the same broadcast team? Is it being subsumed by Apple? We still don't fully know the details, but the good news is we're not losing access to it altogether, but you will need an Apple TV subscription for it.
Thank goodness. I think that's the number one big headline here. Both Tiggy and my boyfriend were texting the link to the announcement to the press release, and immediately I was like, no, you can pry F1 TV out of my hands. I feel like, longtime listeners know we love F1 TV. I think it's just such an incredible broadcast, such an incredible platform, really, really amazing value for fans. Julian Palmer, Alex Jacques, David Coulthard, when he's on, I think they're such incredible commentators. So I would be devastated if that was going away. However, knowing that it's staying, I feel like this is really exciting. Obviously, Apple kind of got a taste of how passionate the fandom is, including in the US with the release of the movie. I did not know until seeing this announcement that it's the most successful sports movie of all time in ticket sales, which is so huge. I totally agree that there's a lot of things that are going to be ironed out. Like, will you need an Apple TV subscription that also still pays separately for F1 TV? Or is the idea that that's all going to be included within the
Apple
product?
It's all included. Yeah. So if you have an Apple TV subscription, F1 TV is technically free, which
So then it's kind of nice for fans, since almost like you're getting, if say baseline you were paying for F1 TV and then you switch over to paying for Apple TV, then you're getting Apple TV shows and movies in addition to F1. So that kind of is a net gain for people. We were talking about this weekend. I'm really curious to see if they make the whole broadcast, the F1 TV crew, and same with pre-race, post-race, like Laura
Yeah.
Winter, Ruth Buscombe, who also are such an amazing group, or if they keep the Sky Sports stream on some component of it. Excited to see what they do with that, but I personally am very excited by it.
Yeah, I'm also cautiously optimistic and excited by it. It's funny, the reel that I did on Instagram about this, it has somehow caught the algorithm of everyone who hates Apple. So everybody is commenting, being like, F you, Apple. Like, you've just lost another F1 fan. Like, I get the, unknown nature of all of this, and I get some of the frustration around it. But I think if anyone's going to figure out how to do it, like, Apple has an insane amount of resources. And so if you're a fan of the sport, the idea that like such a massive, powerful platform is ideally going to be throwing its weight behind a sport you love, hopefully they do it in the right way. But that to me is a net positive in my mind. So they did an amazing job with the movie. I hope that it continues for the broadcast. I think some people are concerned about even their technical ability to host this. I don't watch MLS or MLB, but I've heard that there have been some technical challenges with the
Oh,
streaming of
interesting.
those, which F1 is obviously like very real time and there's a lot going on, so they definitely have to have that ironed out. But I think it's a net good thing, and I hope that Apple proves me right on that.
I was going to say, hopefully, one benefit, and I'm not familiar with the MLS or MLB streaming. F1 TV, at least in the US, as much as I love it, it can be quite glitchy. There can be long buffer times, loading times. Sometimes even the app itself, at least on my TV, takes a long time to work. The iPhone app can be a little glitchy. So hopefully, if they can get that, if the weight of Apple being behind that might help them sort out some of those issues. I'm imagining, again, in an ideal world, if there's a super streamlined, fast app, I feel like that would be great. So
100%.
we'll
My
see.
big question is like, how will Apple attract the generic or general US sports fan? Like with ESPN, you have this massive subscriber base that is there for sports. Like you walk into a bar and ESPN is on. And if F1 is on ESPN and happens to be, playing at that time, then you have all these people who are just kind of walking in and watching it. You have to seek that out, I think, on Apple TV. And Apple TV's subscriber base is not necessarily sports fans. And so how are they going to kind of bring more sports fans into the fold? I think that's something that ESPN has a leg up on. But yeah, I don't know.
That's such a good point, because also ESPN socials would have a lot of other American sports fans following. Or that's a great point. If you're turning on ESPN, ESPN2 on a Sunday because you're into college football or NFL and you're maybe a little early and you're seeing an F1 race on, that is kind of pulling people in who are coincidentally also there versus,
100%.
it's going to be really specific. You have to be a specific fan that's going through Apple TV.
Yeah, I think ESPN, who knows why they didn't want to renew, but it's an insane price tag. Like ESPN was not paying nearly that much per year. I think it was somewhere between 80 and 100 million for
That sounds
ESPN.
right.
So this is a big jump, but anyway, hopefully we have a lot of questions to be answered, but I hope it goes well, and I'm cautiously optimistic, and I'm super happy that F1 TV is sticking around. So good thing. Next big item of news, George and Kimi's contracts were announced. I'm super happy about this. I'm not surprised. I had a feeling both of them would be renewed. It took a long time. And my first question when I saw the announcement was like, they did them together. Like, I get they're all about team. Like, every dream needs a team or whatever. That's their like favorite slogan since Lewis's departure. And I like that messaging, but I also felt a little bad for George that he didn't get his own announcement for this. And everybody was kind of asking and wondering about it. So, super happy the contract was signed. Curious about the timing and the messaging, but yeah, good news.
Definitely good news. I agree on George. So I feel like kind of general consensus is that he is having an incredible season, maybe top three-ish drivers of the season, really outside of the McLaren drivers, which we'll get to, but and Max, probably, or maybe fourth best driver of the season. He's doing really, really well and clearly has taken over the leadership senior driver role on the team. So I do feel like he deserved kind of a big announcement, especially when it took so long after summer break and fans have definitely been waiting for that. It makes me think the joint announcement component of it makes me think that maybe his was more or less a done deal and they were waiting on the announcement until Kimi's was signed, which is kind of interesting. Or maybe George was holding out for more money, holding out for more rights, who knows? But yeah, overall, an interesting choice.
And the length of it is an open question. There's no timeline published. George did say in one of the interviews this week that it is a quote-unquote multi-year contract. But I know there have been some rumors going around that maybe he only got a 1+1 with like a performance clause or something. I have no idea how long the contract is. I trust George when he says at face value that it's, you know, a multi-year contract. But it'll be interesting to see how that progresses and what more information we might get. The people who have yet to sign contracts or announce are Franco Colapinto. He right now is the second driver to Pierre Gasly at Alpine. And then the Red Bull family. There are a lot of open questions around Yuki, Liam, and Isaac. We know that Max is sticking around, but in terms of like who is a second driver to him and who gets the V-carb seats, very much an open question. Sarah, as a Red Bull lady yourself, what are your thoughts on what's going to happen there?
This is a big one. Also, when you read out that list, that is extremely unsurprising that it's the three Red Bull family drivers are the primary people outstanding. I think Yuki is most certainly not going to be in Red Bull at the senior team. I think my best guess would probably be Hajar. He's been doing great. He's young. Seems like there's a lot of potential there. And even though all the rookies have had very up and down performances, he's had some real standout moments. I kind of think Yuki's not going to have a seat because he had years at V-Carb. Like he kind of had that time and then went to Red Bull and then it didn't work out. And this is kind of that path that we also saw with Albon, with Gasly. I think there's not much either for him to be gained or for the team to be gained with kind of taking a step back and going back to V-Carb. I think Liam arguably might be kept on at V-Carb if they feel optimistic about growth for him, because even though he also did the Red Bull back down progression, it was so quick and dramatic for him that he really didn't have a chance to warm up or showcase his abilities at all. And I think Yuki being in that seat confirmed what everyone has always talked about of how, oh, this really is a one person team with, for whatever issue, whatever reason drives it, super, super struggles with the second seat. And so it makes it look less like it was a Liam issue and more like it's a systemic issue. And he barely had any time to get warmed up. I don't know. I still really feel like they should have looked externally for the seat this year. We were a broken record on this last year, but I kept saying, why aren't they taking Carlos? Why aren't they taking Carlos? But I guess better for
selfishly,
Carlos to be having...
So happy that Carlos has gone to Williams.
Better for Carlos to be having kind of a star moment or at least a breakout opportunity and the opportunity to really lead a team into the future versus if he was also trapped in this second driver curse.
Totally. I think the people who could be theoretically brought up to V-Carb, Arvid Lindblad, his name has been thrown around. He's a Red Bull junior. I think Alex Dunn, who I believe is a McLaren junior, his name has also been thrown around a little bit.
And who is Irish, which love that.
Yeah, love that, Sarah, our resident Irish queen.
Yes, I'm a dual citizen.
Yes. So I guess the conversation between Liam and Yuki, I agree. It would be kind of strange for Yuki to go back down to V-Carb unless they brought in a rookie and they felt that Yuki would be a better mentor for that person, potentially. Like, that's the only argument I could really see for them choosing Yuki over Liam. But I think I tend to agree, as sad as it may be. I'm not sure Yuki's prospects are looking great for next year anywhere on the grid. So... but we'll see what happens. We don't know. But let's get into the weekend. So we got the news today, actually, or I think it was early Sunday morning, that the US GP has been extended to 2034. So it's not quite the same super long extension that Miami got to 2041, but it still is a good extension. So I'm super happy about that and continuing the trend of just announcing these track renewals at their home races, which is fun, but I'm stoked.
Also so happy. It's an incredible race. We've said this so many times before, but I feel like for newer race fans, for serious race fans, really it has something for everyone. And I think it's an extremely important counterbalance to Miami and Vegas to have this really kind of driver's track, lots of overtaking opportunities, as we saw all weekend, the incredible turn one, I think, and the longest running North American track, at least since North America came back, sorry, in the United States, since the U.S. came back into the picture around 2013. So I'm super happy. I think it very, very much deserves its place.
Fully agree. Okay, so let's talk quickly about the weekend experience, and then obviously we'll dive into the racing. But this was a bit of a crazy, unusual race weekend, at least for me, because I had to be in Austin Wednesday for a brand situation. I was with Atlassian and Williams for the week/weekend. And so I had to be there for Wednesday and then back to school for commitments on Thursday, Friday, and then flew back to Austin Friday night for the weekend, which was just a little bit of a boomerang, chaotic mess, but we made
wildest, it. Wildest trip. I think I asked Tiggy the status of the trip or how it was going. She just sent a selfie in the boots, denim shorts, cowboy hat, trekking through the Austin airport.
In the airport at like 8 p.m. I looked ridiculous. Yep. I am not a shorts on a plane person, but I had no choice. What can you do? So the Wednesday situation with Atlassian and Williams, I'll just talk quickly about that because it was so cool. Like Atlassian, for anyone who's not aware, is Williams' title sponsor. And so they brought a group of creators to this race, and we got to do a lot with the team and with the company, which was awesome. So we got a tour of their offices, which are beautiful. And I'm like, are you hiring? Because yeah. I need a new job. We had like a content briefing, and we did a day or an afternoon at Allen's Boots, which is a cowboy boot and hat store in Austin, which was so fun. And so I got new boots. I got a hat. This is not the hat I got. I got a different one, but I came back with two hats, which is fun.
Two hats, boots, almost yeah. A Nutribullet. We'll get to that later.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that later. That was sad. Victim of TSA. And then we went to the Hoedown on Wednesday night. Williams hosted a Hoedown to reveal their special livery for this weekend. And this was just special liveries galore in Austin. I think more than half the teams did a special livery, which was really cool. But Williams's was inspired by their 2002 season. And they had Juan Pablo Montoya join the Hoedown as well because he drove that car in 2002, cool. Which was super cool. 2002 also happens to be the year of Atlassian's founding. And they were talking a lot about how the companies kind of come from similar roots. Like when Frank Williams started Williams, it was like sort of from nowhere. It's a really like family oriented business. Atlassian was started with $10,000 in credit card debt and like by two like very close people. And so they have a lot of parallels, which is cool. And what Atlassian does, for people who don't know, they are teamwork and collaboration software at the sort of highest level. And if any of you are engineers or product managers, you know their products intimately. I was a product manager and used Jira and Confluence literally every day. So I'll do more of a deep dive on some of their, like how they're actually helping Williams, because it is pretty cool to see tech partners in action in F1. But I learned a lot about sort of the exact things they're doing to help Williams with lap time. So that was pretty cool. And we're seeing the results on track, which is even better.
Amazing. The livery reveal looked awesome. I saw that Carlos was there. Was there any Q&A? What did he talk about?
Yeah, there was Q&A. He was kind of talking about, it was funny, they got into this discussion about, with Juan Pablo Montoya as well. They were talking about 2002 in that year. And Carlos was like, I can't believe it's been 20 something years since 2002. He's like, I feel so old. And Juan Pablo Montoya was talking about how political decisions used to be within the team in that era, and like jockeying for prioritization between aero and like different departments within the team. It was like very different back then. And he said he like didn't even talk to the other side of the garage, let alone his own teammate. And it was so different. And now we're in an era where these teams have to just like work so intimately together, both sides of the garage. I mean, we're seeing this kind of play out with McLaren and other teams, and it's just a different vibe. So it was kind of cool to see the contrast between then and now. And Carlos just seems really happy. He seemed in a great mood. Oh. He's fresh off like two recent podiums. So super happy for him.
That's amazing. Yeah. Nowadays, especially with social media, the teams are like, you're going to look happy in this reel together, like it or not.
Yeah. They're all doing like social content together. Imagine that in 2002.
Oh my gosh. And then you also went to the fan zone, right? During this first half of your trip, the Williams fan zone. What was that like? It looked super active and fun.
So cool. The Williams fan zone in Austin is incredible. And if people haven't made it, you have to go to the Williams fan zones because there's sims, the drivers, and oftentimes a team principal or other like older drivers come and speak, and they do a lot of interactive stuff. There's games, there's tons of merch. It's just a really fun vibe. And honestly, the thing that makes it the best is just all the Williams fans. I don't know what's in the water, but like everybody's so fun and so nice and so happy. Like people are just having a great time. And I think I've put this on Instagram a couple of times, but you know the phrase, like everybody's a Ferrari fan. I feel like right now it's everybody's a Williams fan. And I really feel that. So highly recommend.
I love that. So then what happened when you got back on Friday? You did your quick turnaround and then you re-arrived in Austin.
I flew back, unfortunately, pretty late. There was actually a Paddock Project Discord meetup on Friday night, which is awesome. Like a lot of the people in the Discord self-organized a meetup where they've been talking to each other daily for, you know, months, some people years. And for a lot of them, I think it was their first time getting together in person and hanging out. And I'm really sad to have missed that, but school and duty calls. But I did get to go to a late birthday dinner for Alice, a good friend who works at Pepe Jeans, which is a Red Bull partner. And she's just been incredible, like an incredible friend and just like mentor almost to us in this space. And so it was fun to celebrate her. But let's talk about Saturday. That was fun.
Saturday was so fun. Saturday is when I come into the story.
Yes.
And we got up and Tiggy had a little engagement, which came back with incredible stories.
Yes.
So Tiggy, tell us about your little breakfast moment.
I went over to the Four Seasons and I had a meeting with the CEO of Liberty Media, Derek Chang. I've talked to him a few times before. He actually went to Stanford GSB, which is where I'm doing my MBA. And he came to our sports conference last year, which is where I got to meet him. And we've just stayed in touch because obviously I love Formula One and Liberty owns Formula One. So I've just been super curious about how he's finding it all and everything. And so it was just nice to sit down and chat for a bit, get his take on the sport and how he's thinking about stuff. I got to meet Stefano Domenicali, which was super cool, and shake his hand and say hello. And that was very much a pinch me moment. I remember at the F1 movie premiere, I ran into Stefano and I said, congrats. And he obviously had no idea who I was, but it was kind of fun to like actually shake his hand and say hello.
What was he like? This is very much from a distance, but I remember must have been 2 years ago in Austin. We went to an F1 Academy kind of launch party.
Yeah.
And Susie, of course, was running it and organizing, but a lot of people in the paddock kind of came through, and Stefano Domenicali was one of them. And he seemed great, really engaging, always in that kind of crisp white button down. What was he like in his kind of pre-work breakfast element?
Still wearing his crisp white button down. But honestly, I got the best vibes from him. He seems happy. He seems competent, intelligent, just good vibes all around. Obviously, this was from like a 30-second encounter, so I don't have much to share. But
he just seems like a very really great
positive force of energy.
Yeah.
And he just seems to really like have it all together. And he was very kind. Like he asked a couple questions of me. He, you know, someone in that position doesn't need to care about the random girl in the Four Seasons lobby on the Saturday of race weekend. But he was very nice. And yeah, I think I'll always remember that first interaction as a very positive one. So
awesome. Well, number one, not random girl, but number two, that is such a good point, because we were talking a little bit about this, about people in the paddock schedules on race weekend. And he probably, was in meetings since 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Probably back to back to back, has to hop in the car to the track. So that is really nice to take the time to have a conversation.
100%. So then we get to the track part. I drove over with Atlassian and some of the other creators who they Atlassian managed to bring some of the best creators together. Like, if you guys don't follow, it's Caroline's Corner, Christina Lee Mace, who else? Sarah K on the, or Sarah on the Grid is her handle. Just really great, smart, kind people. So anyway, it was really fun to hang with them. But I bounced between the Paddock and then the Sports Illustrated Club. Some of the teams have like taken that over for part of their hospitality, including McLaren, because Sarah and I were also in the Papaya Club with McLaren, which was really fun. So Sarah, tell us a little bit more about that whole setup.
Papaya Club was awesome. We had not heard the name before, which makes sense because they told us that it is a newer kind of hospitality offering that they're running as a bit of an alternative to Paddock Club, kind of how at some of these big races where teams have a lot of guests, they don't have enough room for everyone in Paddock Club, but want to have guests elsewhere on the track. So Miami is a big one. See Red Bull Energy Stations, forget what Mercedes calls it in Miami, but Tiggy and Chessa went to that in Miami. So this, my impression of it was kind of McLaren's entry into that space. They had a really great setup at turns 12 to 15, where I had never watched the race from before. Anyone who's looking for a place to camp out or grandstand tickets, that was an incredible, incredible area. You get to see multiple braking zones, a lot of wheel-to-wheel racing. We got to see in the sprint a bit of a Max George clash. Also, the two Ferraris were really close, so it was an amazing location. And then, of course, McLaren is so good at hosting and branding and everything. So it was all papaya themed, great food, great drinks, music. All three of the Arrow McLaren IndyCar drivers made an appearance, which was very exciting, including Pato, who's doing FP1 in Mexico. And then, meanwhile, Tiggy had some commuting to do because also logistically,
very we're far.
At turn 12. And for anyone who's been to Austin, have to obviously a lot of it is restricted by the track itself, including getting around to the paddock. So you have, if you want to get to the paddock, you have to go from turn 12 all the way over to the last turn. What is it, like turn 20, all the way down past the main grandstand under this tunnel. And then you're at the paddock.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I had a couple meetings over there, including one with the new president of the Miami Grand Prix, who is the youngest in history. She's a 28-year-old woman who is the new president of the Miami Grand Prix. It's an insane rise. Her name is so Kathy exciting. Nowak, and she's so cool. She started, I think, only like 6 or 7 years ago in event sales, I believe it was, and then did partnerships and is now literally the president of this Grand Prix. And so it was so cool to get to chat with her about some of the stuff she's thinking for next year. And as I was saying at the beginning of the episode, it's, you know, they're going till 2041. So they have a lot of just stability in terms of knowing their place on the calendar, and they can really invest in a lot. And so I think it's going to be cool to see how Miami develops over the next decade plus. So very cool to meet her and love inspiring women in F1 just generally. So that was awesome. And then in the evening, just quickly before we get into the actual racing weekend, we went to a Clarins party, which they did last year as well for the launch of their double serum product. And we did a lot of celebrity spotting at this party. Most importantly to us were the Formula One wags. Carmen, Rebecca, and Hannah St. John were all there. But Sarah had an incredible deep cut.
I don't know how this came to me. I looked over and I just said, Tiggy, that is the actress who plays Alice in Twilight.
I was like,
he was like, what?
How in the world did you recognize that? I don't know.
And I mean, it
very much was incredible.
Those middle school Twilight movie watching days just really sticking with me here.
Okay, for the racing weekend, let's just start with our MVPs and LVPs because I feel like that's always a fun place to start. And then we'll get into some of this in case you missed it and discussion points. But I think for me, my MVP has to be Charles. I do think Ferrari generally took a big step forward this weekend, which was super exciting. As we know, they've had a little bit of a roller coaster season up and down, but to see both Charles and Lewis like feel pretty good across the weekend in the car, and Charles obviously getting a podium on Sunday and his driving, I think it was one of the best masterclasses in defense and tire management that we have seen in a long time. And it just, sometimes Charles has these bursts when the car is like performing well, where you're just like, there's no one driving, maybe aside from Max Verstappen, there's no one driving as well as Charles. Like, he is so consistent. He's so on it, like the defense and the moves. He ended up finishing P3, but I still think it was just like one of the best performances we've seen from him in a really long time.
You put that so well. Segment, he held Lando back for a long time, but especially when it was in a very imminent kind of wheel-to-wheel in every corner situation, he was driving absolutely incredibly.
Didn't put a toe wrong.
And yeah, and I think it was a treat to watch because it's kind of the first time this season we have gotten to see him get that level of wheel-to-wheel action with a title contender, with kind of one of the top few, either Max or either of the McLaren. So that was a treat to watch. And yeah, I totally agree. Charles will have these moments. He pops back and just is like, reminder, I am absolutely top of the field. Yeah. And can hold Lando behind me for however long. So that was great. I think, unsurprisingly, for my big return, Tiggy, guess who my MVP is going to be?
It can't be Max Verstappen.
I will say, in my defense, I think it is, and again, for people who are newer this year, this always used to be the joke where I couldn't say Max is the MVP because it's kind of too obvious in the 2023 like dominance era. And then 2024, when things started falling off a little bit, sometimes it was justified. This, I feel like, since we are in fully an Max as the underdog era, to the extent he's ever an underdog, but a little bit, at least statistically speaking right now, it was an incredible, incredible drive. It was very much, all the announcers were saying this, it was completely a 2022 or 2023 Max weekend. If you watch this, I think you would have thought, oh, he has the championship winning, the constructors winning car, and is just sailing away with the championship. It was really kind of that type of performance. And I love seeing, I think when he has to really fight for it, we've always said this, but he just seems so happy. Like, he was happier on that podium than he is when he's won 10 races in a row in 2023. Because I think it just is so special. And it's such a kind of exclamation point underscoring his abilities when he's not in the front running car. So amazing performance from him. Amazing job in turn one, keeping Lando behind him, just moving over the perfect amount just to completely cover off Lando. It was just,
there was some crazy stat that I think either Julian Palmer or David Coulthard said that in the past, I think 7 races, only 2 times has the pole sitter stayed ahead at turn one. Both of those times were Max Verstappen. And then, of course, Max Verstappen did it again. But like, that's one thing I absolutely love about the COTA track is turn one and that start is, we saw this in the sprint, obviously, but like, there's just so much that can happen there. And I kind of like when the pole sitter doesn't just necessarily have like the best shot off the line, you know, and we get to see some.
Yeah, it's so wide at turn one. And again, we saw this in the sprint, what can happen, but it's just really kind of anything can happen.
Who's your LVP? Okay,
this is tough. No, wait, you go first.
My LVP, I don't know. It's kind of hard to pick on Alpine all the time because we know that they're just not doing well, but to be fighting in basically 17th and 18th place in this race and the engineers coming on and giving team orders to Franco, who was faster than Gasly to hold position, and then Franco ignored it and passed, which I understand the frustration there, but like, yeah, Alpine, why are you giving team orders in P17 and P18, and why are you in P17 and P18 anyway? So, and that's kind of my
Has the last F1 race got your stress levels through the roof? It might not be Ferrari's strategy or papaya rules. It might actually be your hormones. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating, reduce sugar cravings, help you feel satisfied longer, boost energy, and help stabilize mood swings. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and hormone harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire order with code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. The end of F1 season sneaks up fast, and then all of a sudden it's holiday season, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I really have been using Uncommon Goods for years, and I actually got someone in my life a book full of New York Times covers from their birth year over the years. It's one of the most special, customizable gifts I've ever seen, and that person still talks about it as their favorite gift they've ever received. And Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard Formula One fans and football fans, to foodies, mixologists, avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice, and they've donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/paddockproject. That's uncommongoods.com/paddockproject for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Okay, I got it. Papaya rules are my LVP.
Should we have our papaya rules discussion now?
Maybe we should. What are your thoughts on papaya rolls, Diggy?
Well, I don't really understand what they are, which makes it hard to critique because I do feel like they change often. And my understanding of the foundational definition of papaya rules is that we race as a team and we don't have a number one driver and we are respectful to one another and we just try to be as fair as possible. That is my understanding of what papaya rules is supposed to be. How that plays out in practice can be very confusing. And to be fair, we didn't really have many instances of that this weekend because Piastri was nowhere near Norris in the race. And then in the sprint, turn one, they were both out. So we didn't really get anything around that. But what we did get coming into the weekend was this repercussions comment from Lando around the fact that given what happened last race where he hit Oscar, like there were going to be repercussions from that. No one knows what those are. Like, what does that mean? Does that factor into papaya rules?
What's your best guess? Papaya rules plus repercussions.
I've been seeing some funny jokes out there being like, the repercussions are like Lando has to wear a horrible outfit to media day or like just random stuff like that, which is hilarious. Like, I don't know if there are actually repercussions. If Lando sticks it on pole or outqualifies Oscar, like there are no repercussions. I think it just honestly gives Lando more of a fire to be as fast as possible.
Michaela, she loves rooms. I think it's her handle. She did a question box on it and the responses were so funny. Exactly.
What were they?
It was some punishment is like Lando's screensaver has to be Oscar on his phone or like it was stuff like that.
Exactly. It's like, it's silly stuff. What do you think?
I think I agree with you on the confusion point because it's hard to pinpoint exactly what they are because I think the general rules of engagement with a team, and I think when you have two drivers fighting for a championship, like when you think about Lewis and Nico Rosberg, I think the basic rules are do not make contact with your teammate. And I think beyond that, kind of follow whatever the normal rules of engagement would be when the team says you're allowed to race. Like when the team says to hold position or whatever, you have to respect that order. But to the extent you're allowed to race, don't make contact. And I've always thought the standard is kind of whatever the standard would be of what the stewards would find. Like if you have the corner, do you have the inside? That's what I would interpret it as kind of normally. So then papaya rules to some extent, it raises the question, number one, are there any differences from kind of what any team would make the rules? And number two, I interpreted the differences to kind of be McLaren adding this extra like respect or fairness element to that baseline. But to your point, that becomes extremely, extremely difficult to police. And what I think has frustrated me a bit is I am a big Oscar fan. And I think it ends up feeling like sometimes fairness is interpreted differently. And that's why I still see it as factoring into weekends like this where there's turn one contact, even when it wasn't an explicit papaya rules issue, because I think certain things viewing Singapore, for example, it was very frustrating when there's no action on Lando and not even really a critical comment of like, watch yourself. When Oscar, having never made contact with Lando, gets these kind of radio warnings like, watch out, this isn't how we race. And then it's Lando that has both rear-ended Oscar and then hit him at this last race. And then I don't know, it just feels like this fairness thing is very difficult to police. And I think now it's very much gloves off. I don't know how do you think they should approach this for the rest of the season now, considering that they have Max in their rear view?
Yeah, they need to be really careful and smart about that. But I guess slightly in McLaren and Lando's defense, at least for this weekend, where was Oscar Piastri? Like, where was he? He was qualifying
I
behind
know.
Lando. He was also in the Sunday race, like nowhere to be found in, P6 or whatever it was. To some degree, his performance has fallen off a little bit, and I think we can put some of that on strategy and team orders and papaya rules and Lando, obviously, in Singapore. But where is he? You should expect him to be right up there with Max, and we're not seeing that, at least right now.
100%, and I think me and many other Oscar defenders were saying, I think it was Baku that was the total, utter disaster and kind of started this slump that Oscar's in. And I think a lot of us were saying, oh, well, he's under so much pressure because of this papaya rules stuff and because of the swap in, was it Monza and the pit stop issues with Lando. But then since then, it's a little bit kind of more just seems like the pressure's really getting to him, which is completely understandable. He's fighting for his first world championship and he's had less experience and less time getting used to this. And we saw a lot of this with Lando last season when he, at least for some portion of it, was fighting for his first championship and was just making a lot of mistakes that, for example, Max would never make. And so I think it's totally understandable, but he's gonna have to kind of get it together. If again, if now he's fighting both Max and Lando, and Max, as we can see, is just ruthless. He will not put a foot out of step. So if he has even like the fifth fastest car, you can't be making any mistakes if you're trying to win the title.
Yeah, it's actually crazy how fast things can change. I mean, McLaren did so much great work in the first half of the season to get to the point where they are, to have the buffer that they do. But like, it wasn't that long ago Max was saying he wouldn't win another race all season, and now he's saying there's a 50-50 shot that he's going to win the title.
But
It's
that was the other
actually
thing I wanted to
crazy.
comment on when he got asked, like, oh, do you think it helps? Do you think it was a two-part question? It was basically, do you think McLaren favors Lando and do you think that helps you? And he was just like, yup.
Yep, absolutely. It's so funny. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the sprint. There aren't too many highlights in sprint quality to discuss at length, besides the fact that Max had an insane pole. But in terms of the actual sprint, so we should talk a little bit about turn one and that carnage. Like, first of all, whose fault was it? Zak Brown kind of immediately blamed Nico Hülkenberg, but then walked that back later, which I'm glad he did. I'm glad he said he reviewed it and, it wasn't actually Nico's fault, but it
What
still
did
was
he
kind of.
say after reviewing it?
He said, after review, I apologize for like making that comment
Oh.
about Nico, essentially. But I've watched it so many times, I still can't really tell what went down. And maybe it was just a racing incident, but unfortunately, it made three people DNF. Both McLaren's and Fernando Alonso.
And blame thrown on Nico. I think ordinarily, if it had been a set of other three cars, I think all of us would probably just think pretty immediately, oh, racing incident. The airborne car is kind of an unfortunate accident, and it just adds to the drama of it that it's the two McLarens DNFing. I did feel like on entry, they were kind of being respectful and giving each other space, and then at that wide part of turn one, we were coming over the hill. I feel like that's where things a lot of the times just go kind of haywire. And I do see the argument for it being a racing incident, especially what makes it better is that there were other cars involved. And it wasn't just, for example, Oscar on pole, Lando P2, and just the two of them, because then I
Boom.
think it would be more clear cut. Just overall, super unfortunate. And it also makes me wonder, I think it raises questions of course, Oscar was struggling all weekend. Did he have floor damage? Like, was there something? I don't know, because they turned those cars around for quali, but they had 3, 4 hours, maybe
Yeah,
tops.
crazy.
It was a really quick turnaround.
Yeah, quick turnaround for them. Also for Stroll, Ocon was the victim of a Stroll specialty where he rammed into Ocon. But then Stroll's, like, one of his front wheels kind of got knocked off, and he was driving for a while with only three wheels, basically. And that just must have destroyed the floor. But his car also got turned around. He did get a five-place grid penalty for that, which was unfortunate. But yeah, in the end for the sprint, we had Max, of course, winning. But we did have a fun podium. George P2, Carlos P3, another Carlos podium. And I ran into the Williams team in the paddock right after. And they had, like, champagne outside their hospitality. It was very, very cute and exciting for them. Unfortunately for Carlos, he did not have the same luck on Sunday. But I have to say, watching that sprint, I was like, there's a huge argument here for Max Verstappen winning this championship. I mean, that's exactly what he would have wanted for championship chances. It's just McLaren's taking each other out. Of course, it was only the sprint, so there weren't as many points on the line, but pretty compelling stuff for him.
When you stack it up to quali and today, especially, feels almost like a tidal wave of a comeback. So getting into quali, we had a pretty quick red flag from Hadjar, DNFing in Q1. Then also out in Q1, we had Albon, Stroll, Ocon, and Bortoleto. And one point here that we haven't raised yet that a couple drivers mentioned is how windy it has been throughout the weekend, and how, especially on the margins, some of these issues have definitely been caused by heavy winds, in addition to, of course, the absolutely brutal, brutal heat. It is just, it's baking. Tiggy's feet even are sunburned. And we put a lot of sunscreen on.
I have a horrible sunburn on my feet of all places.
It is just brutal. I said to Tiggy, how many times did I say yesterday? I would just turn to Tiggy and say, imagine being a driver right now. Imagine being in a fireproof suit in one of those cars. I cannot fathom.
Kimmy scootered by me in the paddock in his full cooling vest. I was like, that seems pretty nice, but I really feel for you. Okay, so for the rest of quali, Q2 out, we had Colapinto, Gasly, Tsunoda, Lawson, and Hulkenberg. No major surprises there. Just Q3, insane Max pole. There was a rare mistake from Red Bull, which they do not often
make. Very rare.
Max, they did not get Max out in time for a second flying lap. So I would say he got lucky, but he's just so good. He didn't even need to have a second run. But yeah, it was pretty rare that they were not able to get him across the line for a second flying lap. But we had Max, Lando, Charles, George, and Lewis as the top five starters. But we also had Ollie getting up there in the top 10 as well. So good for him.
We were also wondering logistically. So Max pulled back in while everyone was still doing their last flying laps. Did he pull into the top three area? Did they have to wheel his car over? Like, I want to know more about that. But yeah, very, very unusual mistake from Red Bull.
100%. So for the race, the tires were interesting. It was the C1's debut here in Austin for the very first time, and they skipped a compound. So they did, I think, C4, C3, and then C1, I think, in an effort to try to force teams into a two-stopper, which didn't really work for anyone. Most people just hung on those softs. Obviously a brutally hot day, but it is such a cool track. We were just talking about turn one, but just the elevation and the vibes. It's a really, really good race and a good track, and the drivers and teams love it. For the start, almost everybody started, at least in the top 15, on mediums, except Leclerc notably was on the alternate strategy. He started on softs, but not only just softs, they were 7-lap used softs. So pretty insane, considering the first stint that he did. But yeah, for the start, we talked about Max's great launch and covering off Lando on the inside. Lando, unfortunately, didn't have the best start. Charles did, though, charged up from P3 to P2 pretty immediately. Russell lost a couple places on lap one, which promoted both Hamilton and Piastri. And then Yuki also made up four places within the first few laps. So pretty good.
And then we had a VSC on lap 7 with the Kimi and Carlos incident. Carlos retired, which was so unfortunate. And I texted Tiggy, like, oh, that looked like it was Carlos's fault. Sad face.
So sad.
Maybe a little bit too ambitious there. Caught Kimi by surprise. That was unfortunate because he had already done some incredible work in the race.
Yeah, 100%. The main talking point was the Leclerc-Norris battle for P2. I mean, that went on for most of the race. And like we were saying, pretty good racing from both of them. Leclerc just had that crazy stint on softs. He was supposed to pit by lap 18 at the latest, they said, but he held on until lap 23. And he sort of like gaslit everybody else into thinking that the softs were going to be good enough for that much, that much time. And everyone else was struggling like crazy on the second stint on those softs. And Lando did end up like being able to slow down and then got more life out of those tires after a little bit. But it was pretty funny to see Norris finally did pass him before Charles pitted on lap 21. And then because of the pit stops, Leclerc gained track position, but then Lando passed again pretty late in the race on lap 52. One thing Lando was struggling with, though, was track limits, and a lot of people were as well. Lando did get a black and white flag, so he had to be pretty careful at the end there, but a lot of drivers did. Albon, Antonelli, Bortoleto, all of them got black and white flags. And this was just another masterclass of Max driving off into the sunset and just doing his thing. But yeah, it was a good one. We had on the podium Max and then Lando and then Charles, and our radio of the week was just Charles bringing the good vibes, saying it's good to be back on the podium. So
go Charles.
Sarah, my main question for you before we wrap up here is Max's championship chances. What do you actually think is likely or possible? He's 40 points behind Oscar Piastri.
Okay. And then how far is he behind Lando?
He is 26 points behind Lando.
My prediction is I think he definitely gets P2, which I think will be very bad for McLaren after kind of the season that they've had. But even we saw this last year, it's hard. Like the start of this season is just not always indicative of how the rest of it will go. And Max was the one last year, was the victim to the kind of falling off and slump situation. But oh God, this is so hard. I think Max is gonna win.
Oh God, this is so hard. Max is gonna win.
I was going to say right before that, I think it'll at the very least come down to last race. What's hard is if it was Max versus Piastri right now alone, I would say Max is going to win. But yeah. I think we also have to factor in if Lando kind of takes over as the higher running McLaren driver, I think that makes it much closer. But Oscar does have enough of a buffer that if he can just kind of hang on and be like podium or podium adjacent, he might still be able to do it. So
maybe though, 14 points between him and Norris is really close at this stage. My prediction is Lando takes it. I know you don't like to hear that, but I think that's still my prediction. I made that bet, I can't remember how long ago, but I'm gonna stick with it. Stand my ground. So let's get into the standings super quickly. So Oscar's at 346. Lando is at 332. So 14 points between them. Verstappen is at 306, which is 26 points behind. And then Russell 252. Leclerc 192. Hamilton 142. And then it drops off pretty significantly. And then for the teams, we have McLaren, who has already won constructors at 678, Mercedes 341, Ferrari 334. So it's pretty tight there. Red Bull 331, which is a one-man team with 331 points, basically. Williams 111, big weekend and past couple weekends for them in terms of solidifying that P5. V-Carb 72, Aston Martin 69, Kick Sauber 59, Haas 48, and Alpine 20. So there we have it. Maybe to round it out, Sarah, give me your hot take for Mexico.
It's not going to be Max. I'm going to say hot take is Oscar has a nice, relaxing week, meditates a bit, feels good, and comes back and just reminds everyone why he is the championship leader and beats Max and Lando decisively.
I like that. Justice for pastry.
Justice for pastry, as I text like two times a week.
My hot take is going to be a Lewis podium. I'm feeling this Ferrari wave just kind of continue
to ride. Love that.
Charles had his moment this weekend. Lewis likes Mexico. And if not Mexico, then Brazil. But Lewis, I'm definitely feeling a Lewis podium. They were talking about this horrifyingly scary stat of Lewis getting closer to the longest driver at Ferrari without a podium or something like that, or like,
oh, it takes,
I don't know, some horrible stat. And I'm like, let's stay as far away from that as possible, please. Thank you. Anyway, Sarah, this was so fun. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours and hours, but thank you so much for joining and for coming this weekend. It was such a blast.
Thank you for having me. It was so fun and so good to chat in this format again. And hi, everyone. If you're still here, thanks for listening.
Wayfair's big sale is here. It's Way Day, and it's on now. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. Now through October 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So build your cart and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.